You know, last week we had the first part of our visit with Jim Hurst discussing his brand new album, his brand new band, the Jim Hurst Trio. Top of the next hour, you will hear part two of that. Now, it just so happens in between last week's show and today, I saw the Jim Hurst Trio in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they deserve all of the accolades we've been building up to over the last couple of weeks. Fantastic trio, great performance. Jim is always a great performer. He has a really, this trio is as good as billed. I had a blast chatted with Jim just a little bit. You get to hear the second part of our actual interview on air. And I can tell you, having seen it live, it's every bit as good, the Jim Hurst Trio, as we've been bragging about. This is part two of Jim Hurst. By the way, we're talking to Jim Hurst about Jim Hurst Trio Collection. I skipped over the Machine on purpose, because I wanted to get to Funky Flatfoot. The Machine I couldn't come up with the word to describe the type of rhythm that you're playing. I know there is one. I don't want to just resort to saying it's a swing-based type of rhythm, but help me describe the rhythm that the tune of the Machine is. Maybe there isn't one. Maybe I'm just imagining there's something special about it.
Well, you mean for guitar or for the rhythm for the whole?
The rhythm, yeah, the rhythm of the piece, the Machine.
Yeah, it's a Brazilian kind of. It's not really a bossa nova.
No,
you know, with me, you know, it's because again, I don't know the total theory and structure and whether it's modal or not. I don't really understand all that. So when I play something, I hear other players doing it, like Los Indios Tablajaras or Jose Feliciano or Paco de Lucha or somebody like that. When I hear a song that, this is a song that Nate composed, The Machine, and he composed it on mandolin, and it's got that kind of Latin flavor.
See, that's,
and
that's,
I love that kind of thing.
That's what I kept hearing.
I'm a white guy. Yeah.
I'm a white guy
born in Middleborough, Kentucky. And so knowing what the ins and outs of a clave or a reverse clave or whatever rhythm, I can't tell you what it is. So the feel of the song is the three of us coming together and playing it, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
Well, I hit the words in my mind were bossa nova, but I kept thinking it's not really. But that's when you said that, I felt okay. At least I got the gist of it's a great tune, and I got the gist of the rhythm. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking south of the border, Latin America. So it really works well. I mean, it's,
yeah. Bossa Nova is a close second, but I honestly, when I taught at Puget Sound Guitar Workshop, you know, I don't know, a decade ago or so out in the west, you know, in Puget Sound near Seattle, there was a guitar player there that taught Brazilian, and he taught different kinds of rhythms.
Yeah.
And I think the idea of the song is what's known as a clave.
Okay.
On guitar.
Okay.
I'm not, could be wrong. It could be a semi clave. It could be a reverse clave. It could be a double. I don't know.
I have no idea. I get the feel of the rhythm, but
yeah,
I knew the area of the world, but I did not know what to call it.
And you know what, to me, what shines in this song? And of course, you know, we try to do this with all these songs, but some of them are pretty, you know, the melody lines are pretty aggressive or they're at least, they're busy anyway, if not aggressive. This song has such a nice, easy, melodic pattern. And so when I took my solo, I felt at ease playing very simple, very minimal. And the guys are playing with me so well, and we're playing with each other as best we can, you know. And when I took my solo, the last notes I played were very, descending or decrescendo, if you will, in volume, in substance, to where the last note of my solo is there while Eric is doing a little bit on bass.
Okay.
And I, that is one of the things that I enjoy. One of the bigger things I enjoy with the trio that I'm playing with these two guys is that they got big ears, they listen really great, and they got all these great musical ideas, but space is also a very important part of our trio, as is minimalist kind of ideas and approach. And I just love, and on this, also on this song, it showcases Nate's mandolin prowess. He's doing some pretty complicated things on mandolin. And of course, his composition. It also shows Eric playing arco bass, which is bass with a bow, an upright bass with using a bow. And so his solo section, he stops with the regular, what they call pizzicato, and it's fingering, and then he picks up his bow and he plays a solo with the bow doing the arco version, and then he puts it away and gets back to pizzicato for the rest of the song. And I just love the, you know, the variety and the, you know, the overall talent of these guys. And this song kind of showcases all that.
I was going to say, Jim, you seem really comfortable with this trio as established. I mean, we've talked about most of the cuts, but I think you would feel very comfortable performing with them and knowing that people are going to go to the right spot. You don't have to worry about somebody walking over the next. And also space, I think, is so important for emphasis of the notes. You don't have to fill every space with a note. You just make the spacing is important. And I feel that you really feel good about this particular trio.
You better believe it. I mean, you know, I worked a long time playing in different ensembles. I've done my solo thing. I've done a duet with Missy. I've done, you know, picked at restaurants where they have peanut shells on the floor before I moved to Nashville. I was doing all kinds of things, trying to be another Doc Watson or Gary Reed or Chad Atkins or John Denver or something. And so, you know, that experience and then getting with larger ensembles like the Trish Yearwood Band or, you know, playing on stage with Travis Tritt or playing, you know, in a five-piece bluegrass band or something. All that stuff is wonderful. And the more people you add to an ensemble, the smaller your job becomes.
Right.
Except for bass. I mean, if you're a bass player, your job is pretty much the same every time. Unless, like you're talking about the duet with Missy and I, then her job was, it opened the doors for her to expand on what she wanted to do. But the one thing that I didn't like about at least some of the ensembles I've been in, the old saying is you don't really know someone until you're stuck in a bus with them for 800 miles.
Okay.
Then you really understand who they are, and all the little innuendo, you know, the little idiosyncrasies kind of rub each other, and then you got to figure out how to get along. And some of these bands like Blue Highway and Third Time Out, Door Loss, and all these bands have been together for years and years and years. That's one of the things they've been successful at. How do they get along while they're on the bus?
It's
so they
hard.
Can get on stage and perform. And brother duets, is, you know, like Jeffy and, you know, the Lumen Brothers, and so many have not only had the band to deal with, but also brother, you know, kind of owned their own little issues as siblings.
Right.
And so in this situation, the one thing that I set out to do, Steve, was the number one thing was to create a different kind of music for me to, you know, as an artistic release, right? The other thing I wanted to do was to get in a band with two other people in this case that didn't have a bunch of baggage, and everybody I've worked with I respect and admire, and I'm not going to say anything about anybody in particular. But the one thing that I left Toledo to do when I moved from Toledo to Nashville in 1988, the reason we moved down here is because I wanted to get around people who took this as seriously as I wanted to. I left a lot of folks, including family members in Toledo, because they didn't want to do it as much as I did. And my wife told me then, she said, it's unfair of you to expect people to take this as seriously as you. So let's go to Nashville. She's the reason we moved to Nashville. And so, with that said, I've been in bands since I've been in Nashville, and some of the players and one or two of the artists just wanted to play so they could get, you know, free drinks and free food and be seen on TV and ride in a bus or whatever. And some of them were magnificently talented people. They just didn't really take it as serious as other people. So the wonderful thing about this trio is I set out to have a musical adventure that I could enjoy and create and challenge myself daily to be a better player if I can. I also want to be around good people that I could get along, you know, along with every day, and they could get along with me every day. And I also want to be around people who didn't have bad habits or baggage to haul around with. If we want to go to Canada, if we want to go to Europe, we don't have any kind of record to deal with, you know, any kind of legal issues.
Yeah.
We don't have any kind of bad habits. You know, everybody's different. I have never smoked weed in my life. I have never taken any drugs, and I ain't never going to do that. So being around musicians, which, as you know, as I know, a lot of people, they enjoy the excesses of life in those ways sometimes, and that's fine as long as they're respectful, and everybody I've been around have been respectful about it. But I don't want to deal with that. I just want to play music, and I want to be with good people. And God has blessed me to do this with these two guys, and give me an outlet to be able to play some music that, you know, hopefully will continue to grow as a unit and individually as well. So that's what this whole project is about.
You know, Jim, if you just tuned in, we're talking to Jim Hurst about the Jim Hurst Trio recording. Isn't it great, Jim, that you still feel that you want to achieve those things? And then, on top of that, that you're not only looking for it, but you can find it in this group of musicians, as you've just described it, and still go about what you, I guess, ultimately what you would have moved away from Toledo to find is musicians who wanted to play music at your level with your amount of commitment.
It is. And it's, I feel wonderful about it. And I also feel that, obviously, it's possible because it's happening. It's also a kick in the pants, if you will, for me, because these young guys, you know, they're both of their ages together are still younger than me, which is kind of an eye-opener. But you know what I find, and I want to say this to everybody that's listening, because I think this is really true today. When I was trying to learn how to be a flat picker like Clarence White or Tony Rice or Doc Watson or somebody, a lot of the people who was doing that, either in Toledo or the surrounding area or down here, they had a little bit of an attitude. And I'm not saying they were all that way, but I did find kind of my age group, really my generation, maybe a little bit younger than me, they all had some sort of ego about it. And, you know, I tried not to have, even though I probably did too, but it was not as bad as other people I was around. Refreshingly, the heroes that I know, most of them don't have an attitude about it, don't have an ego about it. Yeah, they have a confidence, and they know that their music and what they have contributed to the musical fabric is important. The J.D. Crowe's and the Sonny Osbournes,
sure.
The Doc Watsons, and you know, of the world, have contributed. But you know what I find, and this is refreshingly wonderful, is that the youth of today, the people who are 30 years and younger. And, of course, there are some that, I'm not saying this is only the ones, but, you know, the people like Nate Lee and Eric Alvar and, you know, Sierra Hall and, you know, Brian McDowell, there's so many that have all this wonderful talent, but they don't have the ego to go along with it. They are wonderful people, and all they want to do is play music, and they want to smile when they're playing music, and they want to join in with other people that love to play music, and that's all I wanted. I just came along two decades too early. And I'm just, it's really refreshing that these people have that kind of love and respect for the folks who came along before them, and they have that kind of admiration and respect for the people they're playing with. And they're also looking forward to the future of creating more music and becoming better players. And it's a wonderful time for bluegrass and acoustic music.
It is. It is. It helps push you along, which, not that you need it, but I'm sure you welcome kind of stretching out a little bit with some younger minds and new approaches to things as you described it. So I really do think this is a great group. Let's touch quickly on the other cuts on the album. This Waltz Is For You. Clearly a waltz. It's also a love song, again, which is okay. I mean, I'm just pointing it out that that's what it is for the listeners. They will know this is a waltz, and it's a waltz about, you know, dancing with your special person, I guess. And you know, you can describe that a little more if you like.
Sure. Well, it is a waltz. I think we all love our mothers. I don't know of anybody that don't love their mothers. I'm sure there are people who have mothers that weren't as caring and concerned and as committed as most of us. And I've been fortunate. My brothers and sisters and I have had one of the best mothers on the planet as far as we're concerned. She turned 90 last week. And she's my hero. She's one of the strongest people I've ever known, but yet she's strong in ways that you wouldn't know it. You know, she's very, very kind, and she's got a smile on her face. Everybody loves her. She grew up in a time where the women didn't really work outside the home very often. She comes from Pearl, Kentucky, which is now known more as Brakes, Kentucky, over in the southeast of Kentucky. And Dad, right across the mountain in Fruton, Tennessee, which at the time he was growing up, they also called it Frog Level, Tennessee. And both of those are pretty near Middlesboro, Kentucky. And when they moved to Toledo, you know, Mom came up and she ended up being a factory worker for 28 years. She also raised five kids, and she also kind of raised five kids and a husband, if you know what I mean. My dad was, he worked in a factory too. But I don't think Mom ever got a chance to dance. My dad was not a dancer. I'm not a dancer. And she, you know, she did all she did to raise us kids. And all of us mothers have done a lot. And mothers are, to me, other than God, the backbone of society. Good mothers is why we all get to do what we do. And we have the kind of personalities and respect for each other as we do because of good mothers. But, you know, when I was a kid, I was probably 4 years old or something when Mom would have to go to work and go to work at Libby Glass. And there were times when she left early in the morning. She worked swing shift. So she would do first shift 7 to 3 for a week. Then she would do second shift 3 to 11 and then for a week. And then she would do midnight shift from 11 to 7.
Bouncy.
And she did that for 28 years, dude.
Man.
She did that for 28 years. So there were times when I was awake, you know, and I would stand at the I would stand at the window and watch her leave crying like crocodile tears and didn't want her to leave. You know, it was a heartbreaking thing for me. You know, as a young kid, you don't understand that people have to go to work.
Yeah.
You know, you just miss your mom.
You're right.
And so that, the first chorus is when she comes back home, she picks me up and this is my imagination, a little bit of creative, I don't know what you call it, license, if you will. Where she would just hold me and she would maybe gently rock back and forth and she would sing to me the chorus. Well, then after that, it's me now singing to her about the same kind of thing. And so the chorus now is, now that she's 90 years old, is me, you know, appreciating who she's been. And now maybe maybe I can waltz with her. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she ever got the chance to dance, Steve.
Yeah.
This is a tribute to her and other mothers as well. It's also a tribute to anyone, I think, but, you know, the last couple of courses reveal that it's for Mom.
Yeah,
and
beautiful.
So, you know, I thank you for including this in what you're talking about today. But, you know, I just love this song. And when I played it for Mom, she got up and stood beside me. I played it for her live, you know, just me and getting up. She got up, stood beside me, held me, kissed me on my cheek.
Yeah.
Just like, kept saying, always, and things like that. And I couldn't hardly get through it. And everybody in the room, my brother and sister and in-laws, they were in there crying. We were all crying, weeping like babies. But it was well worth it.
That's beautiful.
Do you know who Keith Little is?
No, I don't.
Banjo player, guitar player?
Nope.
Okay. Well, he and Don Kenny helped me write that song. I've been trying to write that song since 1996. Finally got it finished.
Yeah, you recorded a song of your mother's a couple albums ago, didn't you?
Yeah, Open Window. I recorded instrumental about her being from Pearl, Kentucky.
That's right.
I call it the Pearl of Pearl, Kentucky.
Yeah.
It was me and Missy Raines, the two of us, recorded
that's
on
right.
The Open Window.
Series. That's right. Yeah. Young Mr. Clark is on here, of course.
This song has lyrics, whereas Pearl of Pearl was instrumental.
You're right. Young Mr. Clark is old Joe Clark jazzed up a little bit and done the way you would do it with his trio. And that's one that I think anyone listening to bluegrass would immediately recognize the melody, although you move it around a little bit and you have some fun with it, and it's a nice up-tempo. I like it.
Well, thank you, Steve. You know, I'm a big fan of the music that came along before me and everybody else. And one of my favorite tunes, you know, at least it used to be, is old Joe Clark. You know, there's words to it, and I used to sing. My dad used to sing some of the words, and I sing them sometimes. But, you know, we were talking about banjo players a while ago before even we started the interview.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I am, unlike a lot of my flat pick and guitar buddies, is I don't enjoy playing fiddle tunes that much. I appreciate the wonderful things that guitar players do with fiddle tunes. Dan Ferry created a whole other level of guitar understanding with his fiddle tune recordings and his books that he produced. And I like it, but I'm also a fan of the guitar, and fiddle tunes are meant to be played on fiddle. That's why they're called fiddle tunes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that it gets a law or, you know, offends the gods or whatever that guitar players play fiddle tunes. But what I find is most fiddle players, or most guitar players, they'll play a fiddle tune capoed up to where it's maybe supposed to be in the key of A, like old Joe Clark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fiddler, so I think old Joe Clark is usually done in the key of A. And so what they do is they capo up to the key of A, you know, second fret, and they play out of the G position to play old Joe Clark in the key of A. They also capo up to that position to play, Billy and Lowground or whatever, you know. And everybody does it different, and I'm not saying they're breaking any rules, but fiddle players don't have capo. They play the songs in the key that the fiddle players play it in because that's how it fits the fiddle.
Yeah.
And so the challenge to me is to play guitar a little closer to, you know, what is natural for guitar while playing a key that works for, you know, everybody in the band. And so saying all that, I capoed up to and played this out of the D position so that could be in A. But the one thing that I like about this is that it's a throwback to old Joe Clark. I call it young Mr. Clark,
right,
because it's not an absolute copy. It's a different thing. The bridges, different chords. The melody takes a kind of a crazy, you know, a little jaunt. You know, it's kind of a little ride to it. And so having fun with it, and then, you know, Eric takes a solo, and Nate takes a couple of great solos, and it's a fun little throwback to a fiddle tune, if you will, but it's not a copy of a fiddle tune.
Yeah,
it's just me trying to be creative while still throwing, you know, a salute to, you know, songs that came along.
Sure, it's a nice allusion to exactly as you have described it, and it comes off very well. The last song on the album, Why Do You Treat Him Like You Do? I am a big fan of what I would call blues gospel or gospel blues, and this to me fits kind of like right in that. And you can fill in the audience better than I can, but tell them a little bit about the last cut, Why Do You Treat Him Like You Do?
Well, you know, I think this song, on every recording I've done, with the exception of one, I've included a gospel song of some sort. Most of it has been songs I either grew up with, or like in the case of Sin's Dark Valley, the pastor of my church, he actually wrote this when he was flat on his back in the hospital. I think, and I don't want to get too pontificating or try to, you know, sway anybody's opinions, but as a Christian, you know, you try to live your life the best you know how. You try to not embarrass your mom and the church members, the congregation, or the pastor, and especially you don't want to create any problems for, you know, you being a Christian underneath the light that is God and Jesus. And I happen to be a Christian, so Jesus is an important part for me. But there are those of us, and I'll include me in this, there are times when we don't necessarily consider that first. We don't necessarily consider our Christian life absolutely first every day, because we're humans and we're going to make mistakes and we're going to fall. And I don't intend to do that. And I've said things to people that I wish I could take back. And I've done things that I wish I had never done. And I think we all have those little bits of regrets, or at least I call them learning ability. You know, when you do something wrong, you learn from that. And I need a whole lot of learning, I guess, as a Christian. So I'm not saying that my Christianity is better than anybody else. I'm not saying I'm worse or better than anybody else. But when Roger Klein brought me this song at the Circle Blue Festival in West Virginia this past May, he just handed me the song in a CD, and he says, "Hey, I want you to listen to this. You may like this." And I listened to it probably 20 times before I called him up on the phone and said, "Is anybody recording this thing?" And that was his intention, was to maybe submit it for a recording. So the message in the song is I think it's more, and I could be wrong, I haven't really talked to Roger about this, but I think it's more about Christians not necessarily doing what they're supposed to do. I mean, all of us Christians want to talk about sinners. You know, we want to talk about, you know, sinners are not making it, you know, without meaning to, maybe we point a finger at people who are not saved. We point a finger who maybe believe different. But you know what? My dad used to say, if you point a finger at someone else, you got three fingers pointing back.
That's right. That's
so maybe
right.
What you should do is focus in on you and make sure that what you're doing is right, and maybe not point that finger at someone else. He's pointing at you. So I think this song says that. So what? Why do you treat him like you do?
That's right.
You
know? It's why do you
it's
treat
a song, it's a fun.
It's what, yeah. Why do you treat him like that? And those are the pronouns that work in this the song title.
Yeah, and so, of course, you know, we're doing it a little different than the way Roger does it. He didn't record it. He just plays it whenever he plays out sometimes. And I think there's a YouTube of him doing it. But he does it more up-tempo. We're doing it more kind of speakeasy, kind of laid-back, kind of bluesy.
Mm-hmm.
And I normally do my gospel music fairly straight up and fairly, you know, I don't know, modest, if you will. But this one just seemed to fit well. And it was, I think, a really nice way to end the CD. I hope the listeners like that one, too.
I think they will. Jim Hurst, man, you know what? I love talking to you. We could be sitting somewhere. It could be on the phone. It could be on the radio. It could be anywhere. But every time I talk to Jim Hurst, I know there's going to be thought behind what you're doing and what you're performing, and you're going to be able to express it well. And it's a bonus for the people listening into this program that they got to listen to Jim Hurst again talk. We talked about a lot of things, but they were all related to your music, and to the love you have for your life and your faith and the fun you're having playing music. And I've enjoyed the heck out of it, Jim. I can't wait to see you in the trio down in Raleigh. I'll be down there wandering around for the entire week, so I'm sure that we'll run into each other somewhere. But thanks so much for your time. I love this album, Jim Hurst Trio. It fits so well into what I know you do at that very, very high level, and I just think you're real happy with this trio. We've talked about that before, but I'm so happy for you that you're having fun doing this.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate the time, man. I know you have a lot of artists that you can talk to, and you do. I'm really honored to be part of that list, you know. And, you know, you do a lot of hard work without getting paid for it by doing this radio thing. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that effort. You know, it's an ongoing effort from you. The listeners are the ones that get it, you know, take advantage of that, or are really their lives are enriched because you're sharing all these things with them. And I really appreciate that effort.
Thanks,
it's
man.
Always good to talk to you, whether it's across the table at a concert or at a seminar with IDMA or wherever it is. And I'll tell you this, man, I you know, the questions that you've asked are you know, it's not easy to be an interviewer, I think. To interview someone else and try to get succinctly what's going on is not an easy thing to do, but you make it sound so easy. And I appreciate the time, appreciate the intelligence, and it's always good to talk to you.
Well, you're very kind, Jim. We will find Jim Hurst down the road. Man, I appreciate it. I will see you in not too long from now.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
I'll see you. Jim Hurst, thanks, man.